you know, if he had to play a 46-minute game out of the 48 minutes or a full game, or his win gets a little bit. I tell you what, he comes out ready to play these games where he's playing here. After Detroit, he struggled in Detroit in the first half, and that's to be expected. The whole team did. But he had a terrific second half again. And then he got back in the groove, and these first two quarters, the game in Atlanta, where he had, I think he had 18 points in the first quarter there. Last night in Cleveland, he had 16 in the first quarter. And he has so much energy, and he's really inspiring. And this team plays a lot better. This team scores 10 points more a game when he's on the floor. And he is really shooting it well. He's just an inspiration. He's got this incredible drive within him, but he's got this incredible talent as well. He might be in great shape, but I'll tell you, I'm glad he's on the Warriors. It's fun to watch him because he is so talented and shoots the ball so well. And just the joy, as Steve Kerr said last night, the joy that he brings when he's out there on the floor, it just lifts everybody up.
Jim Barnett with us here on 95.7 The Game. He's now shooting 52% from the floor, 50% from deep, 93% from the stripe. We got into an argument about this morning. Do you think it's possible he could complete the season, play maybe 65 or so games, and shoot 50% or better from three-point?
That's tough to do. You know, it's particularly, guys are going to start double-teaming him at times, but although it's feasible. I don't know. I don't think about that. Has it ever been done before? Has any guy who's shot that many threes? That's the thing about it. He's taking more and more threes every year. Last night, of his 20 shots, 14 of them were threes. That's pretty remarkable when you think about it. You're talking, 70% of his shots are threes. And if you're going to shoot that many, you're going to have nights where you're going to
We're losing Barnett's connection there. Let's go ahead and work on that, because the sultry sounds of Jim Barnett are something we all appreciate.
Oh, yeah.
The connection is going to ruin that for me.
Really?
I can't possibly get into the full mood here. Barnett's voice really sets the mood, and I feel as if that's being taken away from me.
Agreed.
Bad connection. Agreed. Bad connection. And couldn't understand.
Jim was alluding to, or he was asking if anyone had shot 50% while making that many threes, and Kyle Korver shot 49.5% while making about 200 threes. So that's not the record for percentage in a season among qualifying players, but that's the closest comp we have.
The guys who are at the top, you said we're averaging only two attempts per game.
Yeah, John Sundvold, of course, Steve Kerr himself, back in an era where you didn't shoot a ton of three-pointers.
Our producer was just saying Kerr's the only guy to go 50-50-90 in a season. Cody, is that what you were? Is he trying to get him on? Okay, that's understandable. 50-50-90, Kerr's the only guy, but not the volume. There's no way he had the volume there. So you got to balance the two. But I mean, at this point, should we really be surprised if Steph achieved something like that? Is there anything he could do where you would sit back and be like, man, never thought he'd do that? Like, you know, probably five alley-oops in a game.
You know,
if he was just dunking left and right, then maybe.
You know what, Joe, when you're talking, think about what we're saying, a guy that could shoot 50% from the three. Hell, there's a lot of guys in the season from inside the three, not even a 50-50 shooter. I mean, so if you think about what we're saying, that this guy, how dominant he is, that's pretty remarkable. Because,
and yet all of you tried to tell me that you would take dibs in a layup contest over Steph in a free throw contest.
I said
no. Well, dibs will definitely make more free layups than Steph will make free throws. No, he won't.
I don't think everyone.
Dibs will make a mistake. Steph will not.
We did. Once you put our foot through the fire, we kind of backed off dibs.
Did not back off dibs. I am dibs, and I'm riding or die with the guy. Literally, I will ride or die with dibs. I'm probably the only one in the room who can say that accurately. But I think it'd be tough because Steph this year shooting 93% from the line. His numbers continue to go up, and
if he made all 10 dibs, I think he would be shaken. The layup, the lights, and all the stuff.
I definitely got Steph. First of all, in a contest against dibs, he's going to feel no pressure. The guy's played in game sevens. He's been down 3-1. He's made game winners. OKC from half court or just inside half court making that dagger game winner. He's felt tons of pressure. A contest against dibs is no pressure. He won't even loosen up. He'll just show up. So Steph at the free throw line, 10 shots. Dibs with 10 layups. Dibs. How many people? Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. Who do you have in that contest? If you've got $1 million to bet on it, who are you betting on? Steph hitting more free throws or Dibs hitting more layups?
And again, I don't have to actually dribble and shoot the layup. No. I can stand there
hit
and shoot the two-footer.
You can do whatever you want as long as it falls within the context of a layup, which is pretty much right underneath the basket.
Yeah, it's a big difference, though, because if I have to move from the top of the circle to the basket, the possibility of a torn ACL, blown Achilles, separated shoulder, those are all much more in play.
Your chances go down by 90% if you actually have to move during this whole thing.
I totally agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more, as a wise man once said. I think it was Andrew Kettle on earlier today.
Jim Barnett back with us. Here on 95.7 The Game. Jim, great to have you back. We're hearing rumors that maybe we might see Draymond Green Monday against Minnesota. What have you heard on the trip regarding the status of Draymond Green and how he's been feeling?
That's the earliest he'll be back. He's not going to play on this trip, and so we'll wait. You know, I'll get the old line from Steve Kerr. We'll just wait and see when he's ready, and right now it's getting treatment and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know, but they miss him sorely. They really do. They miss his physicality. They miss his leadership. They miss his playmaking ability. They miss his fierce competitive spirit. They could really use him tomorrow night. They're going to need some toughness in Milwaukee. Milwaukee's all of a sudden, they've become the highest scoring team. They're a great shooting team, both from regular field goal and including three-point range. And back to your question, since my phone failed and we now have a landline, I went back and got all of Curry's stats throughout his entire 10-year career here, and he shot 45% to 46% a couple of times, but he hasn't approached anything near 50%. But I'll tell you what, he's special, and he works hard, and he's getting better all the time. I mean, he 4 or 5 years ago, he couldn't create his own shot. He creates his own shot with casual presence out there now. He's really, really good at doing that. And so he just adds stuff to it. His left hand gets better every year. He does more things. I was talking to his dad. We had him on our show the other night in Atlanta for a quarter or part of a quarter. And I talked with Dale anyway that day, and he was surprised. He couldn't believe it, how hard Stephen worked to get when and how he sees his work ethic. And he's really proud of that because he doesn't just stand with the status quo. He's not satisfied, okay, I've arrived, and that's it. You don't do anything else. He's trying to get better and better all the time. He really pushes himself, and he's really disciplined that way.
Jim, what are the Warriors going to do to slow down Giannis? Who's going to be on him?
Well, that's where you'd love to have Draymond Green. Well, they'll Kevon Looney will be on him at times, depending on the center matchup with them. But also, Jarebko be on him. The thing about Antetokounmpo, he's a great player. There's no question about it. But he's an inside player. And I think the game plan is, if he starts to drive, you're going to bring someone to him. Not the greatest passer. He can be a playmaker. But he's not a great consistent outside shooter, and so you want him to stay on the perimeter because it's the lesser of evils with him. That's the thing with Antetokounmpo. He's a great player, gets better every year, but he's not perfect, and so I'm more concerned with the other players. We know he's going to be involved, but I just thought the guards, they had three players score over 20 points a game a month ago in Oracle Arena. And the two guards, Malcolm Brogdon and Eric Bledsoe, particularly Bledsoe, he got to the basket anytime that he wanted. They've got to play tougher man-to-man defense on the backcourt so that they don't break down the defense that way. Antetokounmpo is he's a load. There's no question about it. But Kevin Durant will be on him. Kevin Durant may start on him, in fact, as I would think, if Looney starts at center again. And they go with Brook Lopez or whomever they do at the center spot. So I think it's going to be Durant who can play really good defense, and you've seen him on this trip play really good defense, including last night.
And if Durant wants to be a defensive all-first team kind of candidate, this is a signature game where he can go out and show just how good of a defender he is. You mentioned Jarebko a moment ago, shooting 72% from the floor on this trip, but his defense is improving. How is that, Jim, that he's improving his defense so much this year?
Because he understands that it's all about positioning. They put him he's a good switch defender. He communicates. He's a very intelligent basketball player. He's got a really high basketball IQ, and he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He doesn't try to do too much. He'll take the shot when it's there. He'll drive to the basket. He made plays last night. I thought, in fact, I'm looking at the stat sheet right now. He had 5 assists. I didn't realize that. He made really good plays driving to the basket and drawing a defender. And when the double team came, he got rid of the ball quickly enough so he didn't get into trouble. He was the highest, believe it or not, plus-minus guy last night. He played 22 minutes to go along with his 11 points, the 5 assists, 4 rebounds, but he was plus 25. Curry was plus 22. Durant was plus 22. So that's quite an impact he had on the team.
Former Warrior, now Warriors analyst for NBC Sports Bay Area, part of the 95.7 The Game family, the great Jim Barnett with us here on 95.7 The Game. Jim, as always, thank you for your time. Enjoy Milwaukee, and we look forward to seeing you when you're back in the Bay.
All right, guys, thanks for having me on.
Do you know this is the first time the Warriors have been on a 5-game road trip with 0 back-to-backs since 85-86?
Wow.
1985-1986, that season. We all remember it like it was yesterday.
Boy, do we.
That was the last time the Warriors took a 5-game road trip that had 0 back-to-backs on it.
It's crazy.
NBA listening to the players and making the necessary adjustments to appease their stars. We finally have to really dive into this Kevin Durant, LeBron James thing. That plus Greg Papa coming up next here on 95.7 The Game.
Toxic. Toxic.
What a flag on this song.
That even deserves a better round of applause.
You know what, Joe? Song. You're right.
That's really good. Every time I hear this song, I think of my daughters watching Brat. And that little song, this they're doing this like this movie they watched, Bratz.
What you should be thinking about is Britney in that video. That's her best video.
Yeah, I'd have to go through them all just one last time. I think Hit Me Baby One More Time still stands out.
It's an annoying song.
Slave for You.
Video.
That was a good one.
Talking videos. The video.
Yeah, and it's an annoying video to go along with an annoying song.
It's iconic. You don't even, I mean, you're a little bit out of your league right now. You may want to pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah, okay? Take a couple plays off.
Why would it? Britney Spears videos.
Yeah, of course I've seen. Hello.
Okay. I apologize.
You ever meet Britney?
No.
Would be a lot cooler if you did.
Exactly. Wunderman.
Talk about this conversation.
Be a lot cooler if you did.
No. So you haven't met Britney. You haven't met LeBron. What do you got for me?
No. I've met LeBron. I've met LeBron. And
just because he walked past you at an event. That's not a meeting.
And Tony Romo was going out with that. What was the same?
Jessica Simpson.
Carrie Underwood.
No, so I met, Jessica Simpson. So I met her. She's come to the Pro Bowl.
Wait. Someone's getting a funeral here. Don't just pass over that. Who was Tony Romo going out with? Jessica Simpson or Carrie Underwood or both?
Definitely Jessica Simpson.
Cody's nice enough to mouth it through the glass. Turn on the microphone.
I don't know.
I think it might be both.
Both of them?
God, first day in radio? Well, look it up.
Wow.
Somebody do something.
So I did meet her. I think I got some pictures.
It's 40 people working on this show. You throw a question out there, everyone just stares at each other.
I don't know, Joe. I'm sorry.
Who'd you meet? So you met whoever he was dating?
It was Jessica. Positive.
But did he also date Carrie Underwood? This is where it gets really dicey for Dibs.
He did
date Carrie Underwood.
Yes.
Music. Good job, Dibs.
We're going to have to funeralize his attempted funeral then.
No, that's not how that works.
I think it should work that way.
Ooh, Anna.
Look who comes in. No evidence, no research, no assistance. Signing with Dibs. Huge. Okay, quick sidetrack. Papa in 9 minutes. We got to dive into, we've been teasing it all damn morning. We haven't really gotten all the way into it. Kevin Durant and LeBron James. The idea that would Durant still want to play with James? Did he ever want to play with James? Based on the comments he made to Rick Bucher, former 95.7 The Game employee, now working with Bleacher Report. The title of the story is, Why Doesn't Anyone Want to Play with LeBron Anymore? Subtitle, When the King Moved to LA, Everyone Assumed Stars Would Follow. But according to some of those players, the challenge of playing in the shadow of a legend and the scrutiny that surrounds him may not hold the appeal we all thought it would. Very interesting because there's been a lot of speculation about this. Paul George, people thought he'd go to L.A. He stayed in Oklahoma City. Kyrie Irving had the relationship with LeBron, then forced a trade out of Cleveland to Boston. Chris Bosh was the butt of a lot of jokes and a lot of issues during his time in Miami. It does, to some, feel at times when things go south on LeBron James-led teams that while LeBron James faces his criticism, teammates, especially, quote, other stars, Kevin Love's a perfect example, take a ton of heat for the shortcomings, more so than LeBron might. That's what this entire article is about, whether it's true, whether it's not. Now, remember, Philadelphia 76ers MVP candidate Joel Embiid is out there actively recruiting LeBron James this offseason. So it's not as if this is a widespread consensus, but you work your way through the equation, you get some certain comments that are very intriguing from Kevin Durant. Actually, you know what? Let me start with Rudy Gay, Spurs forward. Quote, a lot of people are going to be thinking, I can't possibly be as good as him. Spurs veteran small forward Rudy Gay said, and sometimes when people think of playing with someone like that, they feel it hinders them, maybe from getting to that point because he takes up so much of the opportunities, and rightfully so, because he's been so great over the years. Tyson Chandler, who now plays with LeBron, just a few days before joining the Lakers, said this, quote, if you've got LeBron, you've got to make it all about LeBron. You got to be able to coexist with that and fit with that. Who you are, where are you in your career, and how do you fit in? It's a sacrifice, but it's a sacrifice for winning. And then there's Durant's comments. So much hype comes from being around LeBron from other people. He has so many fanboys in the media. Even the beat writers just fawn over him. I'm like, we're playing basketball here, and it's not even about basketball at certain points. So I get why anyone wouldn't want to be in that environment because it's toxic, especially when the attention is expletive attention, fluff. It's not LeBron's fault at all. It's just the fact that you have so many groupies in the media that love to hang on every word. Just get out of the way and let us play basketball. LeBron last night over Los Angeles's, after Los Angeles's win over San Antonio, was asked about the comments and had this to say.
LeBron's Kevin Durant said that the media attention around him creates an environment that is toxic. Did you see those comments?
I did not. I believe that's probably not the whole quote, so I'm not going to comment on that. I would love to see the whole transcript of what was asked of him, the context that was asked of him, why it was asked, and the whole thing. So I'm not going to comment on it because I'm not knowledge. I don't know the whole thing. That would be stupid upon my part. I'm a veteran.
Let's start with this. Is it possible that playing with LeBron James comes with a certain level of toxicity? I don't want to necessarily say it's an awful environment, but when you play with James, do you have to deal with some negativity? Do you have to deal with some aspects of the job that you might not have to deal with elsewhere, and elsewhere being more preferable in some situations?
Without a doubt. And it's not necessarily LeBron's fault, but he is the center of the NBA universe and everything swirls around him. So if you're on his team, you're one of the closest planets to him from a gravitational pull standpoint, you're going to feel that tug a lot more. If you play with Victor Oladipo in Indiana, who's a legitimate star, top 20 player in his own right, he doesn't have that same gravitational pull because he's not a multinational, worldwide brand considered to be maybe the best player in the history of the game. So that part of it certainly, it makes it, I don't know if toxic is the right word, but it certainly makes it more challenging. And then you look at the on-court part where LeBron James does like to have and need the ball in his hands. He's an unbelievable passer. He facilitates. And that's kind of what Chris Bosh was saying. Like, if you know your game and if you're a good shooter, then you can play with LeBron James. But if you're a younger player like Anthony Davis pops in my mind, I don't know if he would be a guy who could fit with LeBron because LeBron, much like Anthony Davis and Kawhi Leonard to an extent, they like to have the offense go through them. And so from that standpoint, it might be difficult to play with him.
Ultimately, if you know your role, you can make it work. But for guys who want a bigger role, a star role, that might be the issue. Better to play with him or not with him if you're, say, Kawhi Leonard?
I think it's better to play with him if you're Kawhi Leonard. LeBron, I think he used to be the sun and everyone else on the planet. They revolved around him, and I think that he still has that gravitational pull where everyone is still the media, that is, like Kevin saying, it's fanboys. I get that. When he walks, people listen. When he talks, people listen because it's LeBron James. LeBron James can be a hell of a player, Joe, down in a box. You can put him down there in the paint, put him at that forward position, and you could put another guy who can facilitate, run hard screens, have him post up and do one-on-one, and you're going to get double team. He can demand a double every time. The Lakers could have the ball and have LaBall be at the point.
Lonzo
at the point, and put LeBron down in the box and throw the ball in there and get the two-man game going, and people would collapse on him, and he could still kick for the open shooter. So they can do different things with him. I don't think that he's – I think that LeBron at 34 years old understood that, hey, look, he wants to win championships. If you can go get a Kawhi, I think that LeBron can adapt his game because he's that good of a player that he can adapt his game. He is a great passer. He is a great facilitator. But look, come on. When they're saying this guy is toxic, come on. You look, and he's not saying he's toxic. He's saying the media around everything he does is toxic. So when you think about guys like Westbrook, you mean to tell me Westbrook is not probably hard to play with, how ball dominant he is? You make me look at guys that great ones, Kobe Bryant. You look at Michael MJ. MJ was definitely a dominant guy. Those guys, they demand excellence. So when they demand excellence, guys sometimes they shy away from that.
Part of the problem with that is they demand excellence. You perform excellently, they get the credit. That's what some of these guys have the problem with, in my opinion. You sign up with LeBron, you could play your absolute best like Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade wasn't getting credit for those championships in Miami. He got some. He got the ancillary fall-off credit. When they won, it went to LeBron James. In Cleveland, when they won, it went to LeBron James. This was the problem with Kyrie Irving. He hit the game winner on Christmas. He hit the game winner in Game 7. And yet, if something went south, he could take heat. But if it went well, you're not getting the credit. On court, fabulous basketball player, best in the league. Some of the guys don't want to be caught in what they consider to be a very tricky situation where they're going to be over-scrutinized on a nightly basis because all the media is going to be at their games. Everyone's going to be watching. The reason part of this works in L.A. right now is you can beat up on these young guys all you want. They can't do anything. Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, they haven't done enough to earn their way to comment back at LeBron James.
So what about Steph and KD? Tell me how's that dynamics working. People said we can't wait for Steph to come back. Steph needs to come back. He needs to be the glue. Steph went. When Steph's out, they can't win as much. Look at his percentages when he's in. So how does that work?
That's an on-court perspective, right? That's an on-court perspective. Has there ever been a situation where Steph Curry, after a game, has highlighted a specific player, not himself, and said that was the reason they lost? Because LeBron's done that. LeBron's very obviously pointed out Kevin Love's flaws in playoff series. LeBron has made comments about his back hurting in playoff series in the past, has called out his teammates. Chris Bosh was on the wrong end of a lot of that early on. Kevin Love got a lot of that heat. Kyrie didn't get much of it, but he knows what it's like. That's what happens, and the young Laker players are getting it all the time. How do you think it feels to be Lonzo Ball? You were the team's number one overall pick, that first pick. You could have been the centerpiece of that team, but you knew another star was coming in. And before you had a chance to even develop, another guy came in, and what everyone says is this. It's LeBron and a bunch of guys who can't play very well. Once he gets his stars in there, they'll be fine. Like, if you're Ingram or Kuzma or Lonzo, it's like, man, I'm not trash, but you're so young you can't say anything. The older guys don't necessarily want to deal with that. I think a lot of guys, and this is how the NBA is, these guys have big personalities. They all want to be stars. The second Jimmy Butler feels bad, he wants to be traded. The second Kawhi Leonard felt bad, you had to trade him. Like, these guys aren't willing to tolerate a whole lot.
And they've all been stars, like we've said all along, from the time that they were kids. So they're used to getting that star treatment. And when a super mega star, maybe the biggest star in a generation, comes in, of course you're going to have a little bit of an ego blow and your feelings might be hurt a little bit.
Do you think so, though, Dibs? When Kuzma said, hey, till LeBron went to bed at 8 and said, I know where your cane is, Kuzma tweets out that to him. He's going back and forth. Kuzma and LeBron has a great relationship. You watch what's going on there in L.A., and I think it's far from that, Daniel.
Well, no one's saying it's a bad relationship. This is the problem, though. If you want to be a star player and you go there, you're not the star anymore. You will take the heat if the team comes up short. Ask Kevin Love. Ask Chris Bosh. Ask Kyrie Irving.
Ask J.R. Smith.
Things work out. The first thing that's getting credit is LeBron James. The first thing. They win a game and it's, man, look at what LeBron did. LeBron this, and rightfully so. He's the star. Durant is talking specifically about that environment.
Understood.
Durant wants to play hoops and comment on things that he wants to comment on. He doesn't want to be asked tough questions. He doesn't want to have to deal with anything that isn't specifically in his best interest. He wants to talk about that stuff. So if you ask him about what happened with Draymond, man, aren't we past this yet? Because that's not, he doesn't want to deal with that.
Right.
That's toxic.
That's true.
But if you want to talk about his business ventures or how he's out there making money, he's more than happy to talk about it because it's good for him. He'll tell you all about what he's endorsing because he wants you to buy those products and it wants him to make more money.
Yeah, he wants the media out of there unless he wants to be able to talk to them about what he wants to talk about. It's a double
standard.
These
guys are stars. They've got a lot of control. They've been able to dictate how they do things. It's not a surprise. I'd be the same way. The Greg Papa Report is brought to you by Gelati Construction Company, celebrating over 100 years of teamwork, solutions, and excellence. Greg Papa joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Pop, we were having a discussion this morning. Right now, Steph's stat line, 50% from the floor, 50% from deep, 93% from the stripe. Do you think it's possible? All right. I'm certainly not. He's not the favorite to do it. But do you think he could complete the season knocking down 50% or greater from deep?
Yeah, we talked about it when he got off to the great start. I can't remember who was on our show. It wasn't Brandon Payne because he wouldn't be so boastful. It was a member of the media that brought up that he would, maybe it was Mark Spears, I can't remember. It's not important, but we talked about this when the Warriors got off to the 10-1 start and Steph was playing so well because the numbers in the NBA, and it goes back to Larry Bird and others, 50-40-90 to shoot 50 on all of your floor shots, not just twos, but all of them, including threes, 40 from the three-point line, then 90 from the free throw line. And then we thought about the concept of Steph going 50-50-95 or whatever it was. And he shoots such a high percentage on twos that if he got even as 50, say he shot 50% on threes, how high could he get the overall field goal percentage up? It wouldn't get to 60. But I don't think it's likely. I think right now he's in a really good role because he played two poor defensive teams, young teams that are trying to find his way. And Steph just got a lot of really open looks. He made 11 total baskets last night, and 9 were beyond the line, and the rest were at the free throw line. So that's the ultimate Daryl Morey wet dream, all threes and frees. So he's playing exceedingly well, and I did hear his name dropped again this morning in the conversation about league MVP. But to continue and shoot, make more than half of your threes or half of your attempted threes, I think that's unlikely. But if he could get up into the 45 percentile, that would be amazing.
That's about where he is for his career. So I believe three times he's been over 45%. Steve Kerr only shot 170 threes when he shot 52%. So it would be hard-pressed for Curry as many times as he shoots to approach that. Can we not yet judge Steph's comeback from injury yet because of the two weak opponents they've played? Is tomorrow the real test for how Steph's doing on his way back?
No, he's back. I mean, it's you look at his skill and you look at his movement and you look at his wind and the amount of minutes he's able to play.
Absolutely.
He played 37 the first game out and he played 33-47 last night. He's back. I was a little concerned when I saw him Monday in Atlanta warming up with a wrap on his left wrist, which I've never seen him play with before. And I texted Raymond Ritter, what's the deal with that? Why does he have that on? And he checked with him, and he said it was stability. He just wanted more stability there. But when he was asked about it after the game, he did acknowledge something happened there. He didn't want to be more specific. I don't know if he fell or anything. But no, he's back. Now, that does not mean he will not play. His stat line won't be as good. You can't judge athletes by their production necessarily night to night to gauge where some nights they just don't play well. Some nights the other team has a great plan on how to deal with them. And the Milwaukee Bucks are one of those teams. They're going to put extreme length on him. And he has a hard time dealing with Eric Bledsoe. On the other end, one way to slow Steph down offensively is to wear him out defensively. We'll see if they cross-match a little bit. Clay, I think, will be on Bledsoe. But Bledsoe ate Steph alive when they met almost 4 weeks ago when he hurt the groin. So, no, he's back. Now, if he goes out and, goes 0-20 tomorrow night, that doesn't mean he's hurt. It just means that Milwaukee had a good plan and didn't play well.
Bob, how do you we're talking about different teams. When you hear Drew Brees, they say Drew Brees and the Saints. It's Tom Brady, New England Patriots. It's LeBron and the Lakers. Is it with this team, is it Steph Curry and the Dubs, or is it KD and Steph? How do you put those titles? Because I'm asking that to say if it's KD or if it's Kawhi to the Lakers, is it still LeBron?
Well, to say it's LeBron and the Lakers, he just got there. I mean, his whole career was in Cleveland and Miami, so he's reinventing himself as a Laker. I understand what you're saying. I think the beauty of the Warriors, and it's the very reason why Durant came here, was it wasn't Steph's team. And I think that was the finishing argument to get him to come here from everything you read. I think he wanted to be a Warrior all along, Durant. He just was envious and just wondered about how do you guys play so free and easy and so carefree and fun. And he was so burdened all those years in Oklahoma that he wanted that. But ultimately what sold him on it was the line apparently, and I never asked Steph this directly, but I've read it that Steph just said, you know, if you come here, this is not my team. It's not Draymond's team. It's not Clay's team. It's our team. And that's the way they play. They are a read and react type of team. If you want to take somebody away, somebody else is going to beat you. It's like the New Orleans Saints. You know Drew Brees better than anybody. Lole, he doesn't stick a snap thinking the ball's got to go there if they right. rotate pro snap. He gets the ball to the open guy. The most sure. open guy shoots. And if he misses, fine. You know, move on. Kevon Looney had a couple of wide open shots last night. He knocked him down. So I don't look at it that way, but it's James's ego. And I heard you guys talking earlier before I got on. What's difficult about James is, and I think he has shored up some obvious flaws in his game. He could not shoot for most of his career. He's gotten to be a better shooter. He still is not a very strong defender. But the biggest issue he has is immense the power of his personality. I'm not going to make it out to be a bad thing because he is a great player. And he does command a locker room similar to the, one of the greatest Warrior stars of all time, Rick Barry.
Right.
A lot of guys didn't want to play with Rick. And LeBron is one of those guys. And I heard you guys talking about, you know, Kawhi coming here. And
He's 34, though. He's 34, Coach. I mean, the thing about the pop, he's 34. So if Kawhi goes there, do you think LeBron is going to realize, hey, my time is limited? Is this Kawhi? Will Kawhi get all the blame?
Well, do you want to win? Do you want to win or do you not want to win?
It's
the bottom line. If you're looking for who gets the headlines when you win, you're not going to win. So that's what I'm talking about. The Warriors don't sweat the small stuff here. That's where the ego gets into play. The one thing, and I did not like, you know, everything Durant said. You know, I don't know if they opened up a bottle of wine or he Durant's talking a little too much for my taste right now. He needs to back away because a lot of this talk, like right now they're debating, what's this Stephen A. Hole show, First Take? Is Kevin Durant a top five NBA player? What? Is he a top five? He's the best player in the world. But because of all the chatter with him, he's never going to get, I don't know why. And I did like what he said about fawning over LeBron, because I've been saying that for years, that the media just fawns over him. And it's mainly ESPN. And that's they're just in love with LeBron James. They have when Dick Vitale did his high school game and the Chosen One, and they've just fawned over the guy forever. Now, he took it a step further and talked about the fanboys of the media. And
right.
He crushed the whole thing, which was probably excessive. But the point he's making is Paul George did not want to be a Laker. Kawhi Leonard would not. I don't think he would survive in that the media crush of LBJ. Plus, as Durant detailed, Kawhi Leonard has become a very heavy isolation-based player. He needs to hold the ball, massage the ball, rock into a move. It takes him a long time. I mean, he's ticking the clock down. He's become a really good offensive player. Way too much ball holding for my taste, but at the end, if he puts it in the basket, it's fine. But his game would not flourish playing with LeBron James. So what LeBron needs right now, rather than recruiting the next super-duper star to come play with him, whether it's Butler or Kawhi or whomever, Durant, is the young players on the roster have to grow around him. And you can grow. If you watch him and be around him, he is obviously not only a genius as in a skill, but everything. He's one step, one beat, or two beats ahead of you on the floor. That's what makes him such a good player.
No question.
I don't understand why Brandon Ingram's game is gone backwards. And Ingram did, you know, tweak his ankle last night. I thought Brandon Ingram would flourish playing with James. So I think what they need to try to do in L.A. is not worry about bringing in the next star to co-star with the obvious, you know, huge star of LeBron. I want to see him make these young players better. And I think Lonzo, outside of the shot, is getting better. Kuzma. But why is Brandon Ingram not growing? If they get those three players to make the kind of jumps they should be making in their second, third, fourth years, they're not going to need anything else to be. They're going to have a hard time beating the Warriors. But there will be a day when the Warriors, if Durant stays, when the Warriors grow old, when these young guys are going to start to take over the NBA. In particular, I think Brandon Ingram in 5 to 7 years could be the best player in the league.
Pop, we talked about this morning. I wanted to get your thoughts. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred talking about possibly limiting the amount of defensive shifts a team can implement per game, maybe banning it altogether. Where do you land on that? Are you pro or anti-shift?
Well, he brought this up years ago, and I laughed at it. And you know, what would you do? You would make all infielders keep their spikes on the dirt if there's dirt on the field, you know, in the infield. Would you, you know, not allow three to go to one side? I think any time you legislate against what the out of the box thinking in a sport does, I think that's not your role. I think it's up to the hitting coaches, the offensive people, to come up with a plan. You know, it'd be like, you know, every NFL game would be like the Pro Bowl. You can't blitz. You have a four-man defensive line. You can't go to exotic personnel. You can't go empty. Well, hell, that's the fun of the game. That's where the offensive minds are ahead of the defense catches up, and vice versa. That's the evolution of sport. So I don't like it. What he's looking at is the numbers are being down. It's becoming the only way to combat the shifting is to hit the ball over the fence. But what Paul Molitor did in Minnesota this year, going to a four-man outfield, I thought was very interesting. And that's the kind of thing I think the sport needs more than ever. Otherwise, it becomes too static, where you've got everybody lined up where you're at. To answer your question, Joe, no, I don't like it. But I think what he's saying is we're having a problem where some of the offensive players in the game are just being marginalized. I think it's really hurt Brandon Belt overall. They're lining up their shift right into his swing, and he's going to have to change his swing path. I don't like it, but it's willing to have to learn more about it. How would you do it? How would you do it? Would you make infielders play on the infield only? Would you only have a three-man outfield? Would you be against, you know, moving a second baseman over to the left side of the infield against a right-handed hitter? Would that be no longer allowed? I mean, I'd have to have more specifics on what he's talking about. You know, initially my thought would be that's not your job. It's the job of the hitting coaches and the hitting people in baseball, the offensive thinkers in baseball, to figure out a way to react to what's going on with the shifts.
And they're instead trying to focus on things like pitch clock and defensive shifts when they should be focusing on other ways to improve offense in baseball, such as having an actual strike zone that's consistent and maybe making it so pitchers can't balk every time they want to throw over to first base. Aren't there other incremental moves that baseball could make to improve offense, Pop?
Yeah, I mean, you make good points there. I think the strike zone is something you could look at. I mean, if you wanted to increase offense in baseball, I think you would go to an automated strike zone, because when you look at the actual rule book definition of a strike zone, it would get them to raise the ball up higher. Now, I know that they are doing that a little bit now to combat the launch angle, where guys are basically swinging uppercut swings, so they're going low to high. So pitchers are trying to combat that by working high in the strike zone with velocity. But if you really change the strike zone and didn't give them so far down below the hollow of the kneecap and raised it, the actual textbook strike zone is the armpits and the letters. How often do you see a ball above the belt being called a strike?
Not a lot of armpit strikes these days.
Not a lot of armpit strikes. It's sweaty there. I mean, go back. I know sometimes I like watching the old games on, you know, the MLB at bat app. Go back and watch Sandy Koufax pitch. He's coming at your neck. Today those would be balls. You wouldn't get guys to swing at it. But if you raise the strike zone and allowed them to pitch up and not down, you would have more balls in play. Now, they would change their swing path. They wouldn't have to go with the launch angle and low to high. They would be more of a level swing, but they would catch the ball higher, and obviously, you know, higher pitches go out of the ballpark. So that would be one way around it. I agree with you. But then, you know, you get into the umpires union, you'd have to get rid of the umpires and not have, you know, home plate umpires, which would cause a whole other problem for the commissioner.
Catch him noon to 3 p.m. today with Monte Hill. They'll be joined by Brandon Payne, Steph Curry's trainer, at 12:30, and George Karl at 2:30. Greg Papa with us here on 95.7 The Game. Thank you for your time, Pop. We always appreciate it.
Two of my favorites, Brandon Payne and Georgie. We'll have fun today.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Thank you.
Take care, guys.
All right. Armpit strikes. You don't see them anymore.
No.
Sweaty up there.
I love it. In the strike zone, technically, according to the rule book, a pitch on the black, quote unquote, is not a strike. It's supposed to be over the white of the plate. So not only do they give them the black, but you get 2 and 3 inches outside, which makes it a bigger advantage for the pitcher.
Kevin Durant making these comments about a toxic environment that surrounds LeBron James. Not LeBron's fault, but a player of his magnitude draws a certain amount of attention. We've seen this. I mean, did we not see this with Barry Bonds? Did he not have, what, two lockers with Lazy Boy?
Three lockers
with the Lazy Boy. I mean, imagine being Jeff Kent, for example, on that team. What do you think life was like when you had a good game and you came into the clubhouse afterwards and everyone went running up to Bonds to get his quote on everything, right? I'm sure that's got to rub you the wrong way. I'm sure you have played exceptional games in your career, but the media might go to LT or Drew or Phillip first because that's the more marquee attraction. We see it with Heisman voting. We see it every year with MVP voting. That's the way of the business. It can cause a little bit of an issue. With LeBron, it causes a bigger issue, which makes me wonder, all this speculation about these two playing together, we see how Durant feels about the media. You go down there, that's going to be something you've never faced before. Why would he want that? Why would we believe he wants that?
Paul George scored 47 last night, and you watched the way that this guy hit the game winner, and you saw who was one of the first guys up in his face, a guy that everyone said it's a eye guy, can't train him. Westbrook was the first guy to give him and cheer him on.
He had a nice crossover, too, there.
Yeah. PG, you've seen it. I mean, here's a guy that it's supposed to be one guy's team, but they step up in certain situations. You could have two superstars. Look at KD and look at Steph. They get along. It can happen. And I think that LeBron James, in my opinion, I get the media is going to him, but Kawhi's a great guy that people want to come up and want to interview him. If you don't think if KD's here, him and the media is going to be with him too. And LeBron understands that. Look, KD's going to give them more than what LeBron is. LeBron stays in his wheelhouse. He's going to be you. He's going to give you short answers. He's going to keep it tight. KD's the one that's going to give you more and have more of the things for give more bulletin board material. So I think that they can exist. I think that you really can. I think you understand who you're dealing with. David West and Draymond Green. Two big guys, two big personalities in their own way in the locker room. Both have their own leadership skills. David West ain't a punk. And this ain't a guy that Draymond could back into a corner and fall to. David West wasn't going to have that. You understand dynamics when you're in locker rooms and there's Anadinoli. He's Ray Lewis. Ray knew how far to push Onada. You know what I'm saying? So
Haloti Nada?
Anadinoli. It's
I'm pretty sure that 99% understood.
Yeah, thank you.
Anadinoli.
Yeah.
Saham and Manu.
Same thing.
It's all the same thing.
You see where I'm going, though?
It's really just, what's it, anagram?
Yeah.
You take the letters and you mix them up.
That's
and
right.
You get something else. Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
I just believe that when you have guys like that with that caliber and that much gravitas, I think that they coexist because they know they have to. So I think that if you had a guy of that stature with the LeBron James, they understand the importance of what everyone believes, how they should act and how they're going to coexist. And I think that it would work. That's all.
I don't disagree. I don't think James would create an issue for Durant and Durant wouldn't create an issue for James. I think it's the media that's the problem. That's what Durant doesn't want. I think he's extraordinarily particular. He likes playing basketball. He's a pretty simple guy. I think he's a pretty laid back guy when you really get down to it. He's pretty real with everybody. But like a lot of people, he can get annoyed.
Yeah.
Part of the job is dealing with the media and the negativity. I just don't think he wants that. I don't think he wants to have to deal with it. I can understand that. Unfortunately for him, that's part of the gig. Here, you've already earned yourself 2 years of,
goodwill.
Tenure. Let's just say tenure. You're going to have a third year. You win three titles.
You can do
anything
you want.
It's going to be as comfortable here as anywhere on the planet. Because the reality is, and I wonder how much he thinks of this, if he hates dealing with the media, literally any other team he goes to, he's starting fresh. His three titles here don't mean anything anywhere else, at least not in a positive way. They'll look at you and say, well, you won up there. You won three titles. What are you going to do here? Second, you come up short. Yep, it was all Steph Clay and KD or Draymond. It was all them. You needed them to win. You can't do it on your own. Do you think he wants to deal with that on a daily basis? The more I listen to him speak, the more it sounds like staying is the perfect fit for him. He doesn't sound like a guy who wants to go to New York and get crushed in the daily news. Every single day.
He gets crushed more in New York than he does if he goes to L.A.
He gets crushed anywhere. He goes east of the Mississippi River.
And he's got to start fresh. He hasn't delivered a title anywhere else. That's the expectation when he arrives is not, three-time champion here to Joe Montana in Kansas City. You are going to be expected to win, and if you don't, you could drop 50 and lose. We saw what happens to LeBron in those situations. LeBron can't get by the Warriors. LeBron has had great games where people still cut him down. Peyton Manning has had these unbelievable seasons, but if he couldn't get by Brady, people used to say Peyton Manning a choker, choker in big games. Remember when that was a thing?
Only one team wins the Super Bowl, yet somehow he's a choker because he couldn't get by Tom Brady.
Yes, people, it's not rational.
Right, and that's why you guys call me biased when I'm like, not. I recognize that, and that's why I say LeBron is still great. That's why when he scored 50 and they didn't win, I don't see everyone else goes and say, oh, we can't get by the Warriors. Not me. I look at
Papa was mentioning all the ESPN people who fall over themselves for LeBron. I was thinking, we got one close to home here who doesn't work for ESPN, who largely does the same thing.
I don't think that's right. I think you're wrong. I think you're taking that out of content. I think that
you're a veteran, though, so you won't respond to it, much like LeBron. Because you're a veteran, and you know better.
I hate to do it, but this just kind of got you in a tough corner with that commentary.
I'm really not even.
Pay no mind.
That's fine.
Why would it be who
gotcha.
Me to go to?
Turn my mic off, please.
He sat here and said, oh, my God, so he can't get by. He couldn't get by the Warriors and all those things, and that's how everyone viewed it. I said, no, I didn't. I watched certain guys like Iverson. It wasn't he couldn't get by the Lakers. He was the one guy. He was a one-man team. So, of course, he wasn't going to get by the Lakers. How dare
greatest
you think
one-man
that?
Show ever.
LeBron's okay. team was so, way better than that Philadelphia
trash.
Team.
You know you're
garbage.
Okay, we're getting a little off topic with what we were discussing.
Compare the rosters.
But when we bring it back, though, the idea that anywhere he goes, where is he going to have a better shake from the media? Just think about it.
There's only one place.
29 other teams. Where could Durant go outside of here where he's going to get a more comfortable situation to his liking from a media perspective and a coverage perspective? You say one place. What is it?
It's the team that isn't a team anymore but might be someday, and that's Seattle. If he goes back to Seattle,
interesting.
He gets us, and that's what Rick Bucher mentions in the piece, and KD actually talks about it. He says, you know, I'd love to go back to Seattle, but that's not until most likely the end of my career because Seattle – at the earliest, the NBA is not looking to expand, but now that they have a hockey team, there is a thought that maybe Seattle will now get a basketball team. If Memphis or New Orleans decides to relocate to Seattle, in my opinion, that's the only place he could go where he would have an easier time than what he's going to have
and
here
I
in
disagree
Golden State.
With
what about
there.
Wakanda or Pandora? Because those places are just as likely to have a team as Seattle.
They disagree with that
and
notion.
And that's why.
That's wildly out of line.
And that's why I disagree with him, because like you said, Seattle doesn't
I got
have
him on pay no mind. I don't even know what
good.
He's saying.
Yeah, and how could you disagree with me when I'm on pay no mind?
Because there's another team
Boom.
Out there. There's another team out there, Dibs, that he could go back to Oklahoma, where he started, and I think that he would be welcome back to Oklahoma.
After all the cupcake t-shirts?
What happened to LeBron when he went back to Cavs, okay?
They didn't give him cupcake t-shirts.
They burned his jersey, for heaven's sakes. The guy wrote a letter. And what happened when he came back? They opened up with open arms. So for you to, how dare
he's from there, and Kevin Durant is not from Oklahoma City, so that's quite a difference.
If he would go back to Oklahoma City, you are right that it would be... it would be less toxic to use
Without
the word than some of the other locations, but still the pressure's going to be there.
The pressure would be
the
there.
The pressure's going to be there because anywhere he goes that isn't Golden State, anywhere, the second he doesn't win, just turn on your TV on the talking head shows. First comment out, you see, he needed the Warriors to win.
If
that is what
win,
he's facing.
I get it, but if they don't win this year, he's going to get the same, so it doesn't matter. I get it. If they...
He's like, what do you mean? If the Warriors don't win this year,
it's going to be what happened. They got all these guys. They couldn't get along.
Well, that's on all of them, though. That's on all of them.
Okay, so if he loses this year, he's still free. You see what I'm saying? So it still would be toxic because the outlash would happen if the Dubs don't win this year. It's going to be crazy. They're going to go back to him and Draymond. You know what kind of how toxic it's going to be? So I think there's several places. I think he can go play with Giannis in Milwaukee where it's not necessarily a huge...
He's not going to Milwaukee. The market's too small.
But he can be... He would change the market.
Giannis, I don't think Giannis is going to want someone to come in. This is the Kyrie LeBron
thing. But here's the thing. Giannis would want him there. Giannis with him, they would coexist.
That's Giannis's team, though. All of a sudden, he's going to want to be number two?
He won't have to necessarily be number two. It's about having...
I don't know about that.
You got to have more than one superstar. Look what happened here with the Warriors. And here's why I say, you keep saying it's a small market. Look at Oklahoma, how small a market still work. A smaller market in both of those. Cleveland. For heaven's sakes, Cleveland's a small market. But what did LeBron do to it? So now if you put a KD in a small market in Milwaukee, It's bigger than Cleveland, for heaven's sake. So, yeah, you could galvanize that community and make it now. They'll be on TV all the time. You can have a small market if you got great players.
No, it's not. I'm not saying you can't win in the small market. I'm saying outside business opportunities. I should have been more clear about that. That's on me. He is a smart businessman. Really smart. LeBron's a smart businessman. These guys know that if they're in the major cities, they have... Now, granted, the internet and technology now makes it easier to communicate with Silicon Valley and everything, but I think part of the allure to LeBron LA business, just like the Bay Area here, they actively sell Silicon Valley. You get to line up for all this all these companies with their Series A funding are lining up for you to invest. They're pitching you their best possible stuff to get you involved. Granted, you can do that from a distance, but Durant even said that. I think it was in the interview with Bill Simmons, how it used to be once or twice a year when Oklahoma City came to the Bay Area to play the Warriors, he could meet with these guys. Now, he can meet with them virtually every day.
How many deals do you really want, though, Coach?
I don't know.
You know what I'm saying?
I hear you.
It gets to a point where you're like, look, I get a deal every day.
I'm good with my billions. I have my billion at Wells Fargo. Another billion at Bank of America. I'm good.
My phone rings
every 3%.
Day.
Well, I think you can answer that because, I mean, how many properties do you have?
And
do you
also answer it.
I'm sorry, Joe, you can't. I mean,
I
suppose you could. I mean,
back on pay no mind.
He jumped in hard, didn't he?
Yeah.
But now you get to a point, though.
I've lost track of who's getting pay no mind from whom right now.
No one's listening to anyone.
Exactly.
That's pretty much
it's on brand.
Standard position.
Exactly.
Right? But you get tired. You're like, okay, I got enough deals. I'm over it.
Well, you're also older. Kevin Durant is not nearly as old as you are, right? So he's not yet at that point where he's tired.
You also have a family
as well. You remember 15 years ago when you were still in your 30s, you were chasing it a lot harder, success. And now you're not, you know, easing into retirement, but you certainly don't have that same eye of the tiger.
No, no, here's the difference is when you're in it, he's in it. And it's over the top now. It gets actually easier. You're saying right now, it's harder now for him. Because it's you got to play basketball. You're trying to think of business deals. You're balancing everything.
You got to do all these interviews.
Right now, it's way more convoluted.
You got Bucher calling you at every turn.
Absolutely. You got to jump on radio. You got all these different things. So I think it's a lot harder for them now.
All right, let him up. Brad Evans, Yahoo Fantasy Sports, is going to get you set for this weekend. The playoffs are right around the corner. 888-957-9570. We got your back here on 95.7 The Game.
95.7 The Game and Alaska Airlines present the Hawaii for the Holidays Getaway. We're sending you and three guests to the Aloha State this holiday season. All you have to do is go to 95.7thegame.com right now and register. Listen tomorrow as Joe Lo and Dibs call out one of the registered names at 7:20 a.m. If you hear your name, call back within 9 minutes and 57 seconds to qualify. It's the Hawaii for the Holidays Getaway, courtesy of Alaska Airlines, with nonstop flights from the Bay Area to Hawaii. Visit them today at alaskaair.com.